I'm Dr. Ritchie. Okay, so this is an analysis using a large data set, which is what our section is. And what I did was a comparison of methods for sex steroid hormone adjustment using the National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey, or NHANES 3 data. Today I'm going to give a brief background, study objectives, methods, results, strengths, limitations, conclusions, and then a few comments and questions. And this was part of my student dissertation, so I wasn't funded. I don't have any disclosures. So past studies examining sex hormone markers have predominantly been in linear regression models or logistic regression models when you're considering risk for chronic diseases. Different levels of testosterone and estradiol, or sex steroid hormones, are thought to be risk factors for several chronic diseases, and particularly prostate cancer. So a little bit of background about that. In 2008, in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention, there were a series of papers done, one of them by Dr. Singh's group, who's at National Cancer Institute, in rebuttal to Dr. Carpenter's paper, basically saying the androgen hypothesis in prostate cancer is not dead, which is what Carpenter had suggested based on the endogenous hormone and prostate cancer collaborative group findings when they combined 18 prospective studies and didn't find an association with testosterone and estradiol with prostate cancer risk. So that's sort of a little bit of a background about the controversy in 2008. Typically, sex steroid hormones are found to be consistent by different age groups, inconsistent for race and ethnicity. Also, a caveat on that is in the U.S., we typically have data on whites and blacks, but smaller subgroup populations we can't really analyze because we don't have enough power. Hispanics, it's a growing population, so we now have enough data to actually investigate Hispanic groups. But then we really have to ask, since race is purely a social construct, what does it mean? And then studies have been emerging looking at body mass index and sex steroid hormones too, as changing as obesity status changes or body mass index changes. So looking through these papers, the statistical methods typically assume a linear relationship between testosterone and estradiol with the carrier protein sex hormone binding globulin, or a linear or a quadratic relationship with testosterone, estradiol, and the carrier protein albumin. Most studies provide a biological justification for the methods that they use, but they don't present a statistical justification. Now, that doesn't mean that they didn't come up with one and they just didn't report it in their results or their methods section. It just isn't there. So I can't say that it wasn't done. There wasn't a statistical justification for what they did. It just wasn't apparent. So model choice for the adjustment of sex steroid hormone binding globulin and albumin may influence the importance of covariates in the linear regression models like age, race, ethnicity, and body mass index. So it may not be that these are functioning differently. It may just be the method of adjustment changed the results. So my study objectives were to determine whether a linear or a nonlinear approach to SHBG and albumin adjustment is best using linear regression models with testosterone or estradiol, and to examine if different SHBG and albumin adjustment methods change the relationship of age, race, and ethnicity and body mass index in linear regression models with testosterone and estradiol. So I used NHANES 3, which, since we're talking about analysis of large data sets, I'll tell you a little bit more about this. The data is available online. You can merge the data sets together. SAS 9.2 can readily handle the statistical procedures for this. You may be able to do it in SPSS or R or Stata, but I'm not sure. I've used SAS 9.2. If you use SAS 9.1.3, beware, because it's more of a beta version, so really stick with SAS 9.2 when you're doing the complex survey design, okay? So I ended up with 1,506 men that were 17 years or older with adequate hormone information, okay? So if somebody didn't have sex hormone binding globulin data, albumin data, testosterone, estradiol, I removed them from the analysis. I also stuck with morning phase one because we know that we need to control for the time of day the hormone measurement is taken because hormones fluctuate throughout the day. So the first thing was just to test linearity like we do when we're running a linear regression model. Our first assumption is linearity. So I looked at the correlations, and I also looked at the F-tests to compare nested models. And I'll show you a little bit about that. And then I wanted to examine the influence of linear or nonlinear adjustment choices on the covariates age, race, ethnicity, and body mass index. And to do that, I used a continuous SHBG variable or albumin variable. I used an adjusted variable, and you can see the different divisors on the slide. And then for nonlinear or a linear relationship, I used a categorical SHBG variable or an albumin variable. So the categorical variable can handle either one. And then to look and make sure my other assumptions were met, I of course reviewed my residual plots, and all my other assumptions were met. So that would be independence, normality, and equal variance. So in table one, looking at the linear relationship, SHBG and estradiol didn't have one. So at that point, we just kicked that one out. We didn't look at it any further. Then we looked at albumin and estradiol, and we looked at SHBG with testosterone and albumin with testosterone, because those were weakly associated. They were weakly correlated. So then, using the F-test to compare my models, remember that this test tells you that you can drop one or more variables, okay? But you have to have two. So this is why I'm comparing a cubic model to your simple linear model. And what I found was the cubic actually worked better when we're looking at testosterone and SHBG. And then when we're looking at testosterone and albumin, actually the linear model performed better. And then the quarctic model or the four-level model performed better. So at that point, it would probably be better to use the linear model. That's open for debate. So then looking at the 17 estradiol models with albumin, what was interesting was both the linear model that's simple and the quadratic model both came out okay in the F-tests. So if we're seeing that in the literature, that may not necessarily be a bad thing, but really at the end of the day, which one is better? So then we need to go to our plots and review some other things. So then I wanted to look at the parameter estimates for age. And remember, I've got my continuous SHBG variable, my categorical SHBG variable that can handle either a linear or a nonlinear relationship, and then my adjusted SHBG, which also assumes a linear relationship, and the same groupings for albumin. Now, SHBG didn't change the parameter estimates, but in albumin, we see for both estradiol and testosterone that the adjusted model did change the parameter estimates. So race ethnicity, along similar lines with testosterone and SHBG, we didn't really see many differences regardless of what model type we used. But when we looked at albumin for the adjusted model, it did make a difference. Same type of thing for body mass index. So in summary, looking at the adjustment method for sex hormone binding globulin, it was weakly correlated with testosterone and not estradiol. The F-test indicates that a nonlinear model was better for testosterone. And we would recommend a categorical adjustment, basically because this could handle either nonlinear or linear data. For albumin, there was a weak positive correlation with testosterone and a weak negative correlation with estradiol. And the F-test indicated that a linear model was probably better. And the quadratic models were not appropriate, except for estradiol. This was something I changed. My update didn't make it. Sorry, guys. And the linear models may be best for testosterone and estradiol. So, and then looking at adjustment, for SHBG, again, there weren't really any big differences. You could pretty much use any model and get pretty darn close to the same result. But for albumin, the adjusted model parameter estimates for the covariates were different in the linear and the adjusted and the categorical. So that's something to bear in mind. And regarding strengths and limitations, going back to the NHANES 3 data, it's really well documented online too. So I chose just some specific ones to this analysis. And the main exposures were pretty darn complete, 99 to 100%. And the sample is U.S. representative. The hormone measurements were standardized against a control. I did select only morning samples. And all the other assumptions for the models were met. I just didn't show the data here. And regarding limitations, I only had one single hormone measurement. So that is a limitation. The data is a little bit older. It runs from 88 to 91, but that is the information that's available from NHANES, because bear in mind, not all data is available at all points with NHANES. There's a lot of information in there, but it just might not be collected at the same time. And you can't really directly compare linear and nonlinear models. So I'm kind of comparing apples and oranges to a certain extent. So keep that in mind too. So in conclusion, linearity between testosterone and estradiol with sex hormone binding globulin albumin should not be assumed and should be tested and reported in your paper. And the methods of adjustment for sex hormone binding globulin and testosterone in models only slightly influenced age, race, ethnicity, and body mass index. And the method of adjustment for albumin and testosterone and estradiol models does influence certain age, race, ethnicity, and body mass index groups. I'd like to acknowledge my co-authors, the NHANES 3 study participants, Mr. and Mrs. Norman J. Arnold, the donors to the University of South Carolina, and the University of South Carolina Department. Okay, comments or questions?
We have plenty of time for questions, so does anybody have questions?
Go ahead. Oh, I see. The reason why I looked at adjusted models is because in the literature, most studies that look at sex steroid hormones either use a linear model with testosterone as the outcome or estradiol as the outcome variable, or they'll look at an adjusted model with testosterone over SHBG. So I was really comparing what was already found in the literature. That's correct.
Okay, so and also there's something in the non-linear model. It says here outcome variable, here is the continuous.
Right. So a non-linear model, or a non-linear in the sense that if I'm not treating SHBG as a linear variable, if I'm treating it as a categorical variable and categorizing it, it's no longer linear. So when I was referring to a non-linear quote unquote model, it meant that I was using SHBG as a categorical.
Right.
Or my controlling variables.
Right.
So I couldn't run a correlation between a categorical variable and the outcome. Yes. Right.
Which one?
Let's go back.
The covariance is as x square and x cubic.
Right.
Or you use your hormone in variable.
Right. And we went back and forth with this on my committee, too. And my statistician, who is wonderful, and I happen to agree with her, she wanted to look at the F-test results. And basically what we were doing here was, like in the first one, for example, we're comparing continuous SHBG. Now, all of these are handled as SHBG continuous, right? Except one's to the quadratic and one's to the cubic,
okay.
Right? So then, actually, based on the F-test, the cubic model performed better. So at that point, it's not really our simple linear model anymore that performed better based on the F-test. It's actually the cubic. And that would really be based on the shape of the data, right?
Then what you linked to your other covariance?
Can you say that again?
What you linked to, you use the original T, or do you use the adjusted T? That's where...
Oh, I see. Yeah, none of these are adjusted. None of these are adjusted. So this is just looking at SHBG in a simple linear model and SHBG in a cubic model and running an F test. Then when we got to the others to compare categorical, continuous, and the adjusted, those don't take into account the cubics. They're really two separate sets of analysis because we were trying to get at this issue whether or not we should use a linear or nonlinear model. And there really isn't a good test that we could come up with. So we used two different approaches, both of which have limitations. The F-test obviously being, you know, I can't really directly compare the simple linear model to the quadratic, which is often used in the literature, but for estradiol, so I couldn't really do that either. So, yeah, we were kind of going around the problem. We couldn't really jump on top of it. Sure.
So when you do the analysis, you subpopulation from the original survey, right?
Right.
Did you do the sample weight?
Yes. Yes, we did take that into account. There are several variables that do that for the stratum, the PSU, all. Yes. And SAS 9.2 can handle that for linear regression quite readily.
And do you have any idea like how many, what's the proportion of the data that you excluded from your analysis?
Right. Right, I did not, but at the same time, I took out maybe 20 people because they didn't have adequate hormone data. Now, those 20 people, you're correct, they could represent hundreds of thousands of people, but since they didn't have hormone information, I couldn't include them, so I couldn't really do a sensitivity analysis on the hormone variables because they just don't have it, so... Right, I mean, well, and whether those 20 people represent 20% or a greater number, I mean, it depends since, you know, the way the survey is designed, one person could represent 1,000 people, it could represent 100,000 people. I would hope it wouldn't be that many, but yeah, I'm not sure how many, I didn't look into that, but that's a really good point. It's well taken.
When should the decision be made? Should go for one or two, or should I just run both and be confused because they don't go for two? I would like to know your like, idea on that. Should you agree with
it? Right. So basically, when you're looking at linear regression, this really addresses the issue of a lot of times the assumptions just aren't even addressed. And there will be a cross-sectional data set, and analysts will just go for it and not test the linearity assumption, the independence, the normality, and the equal variance. So that was really what I was trying to stress, is that's important to do. And one of the reasons why is because it can really affect your results. So as far as which model should you choose, in the first instance, the cubic model may look better, but is the cubic model easier to describe? My answer would be no. A cubic model is pretty hard to describe, but on my F test, it said to do that. So a really good alternative would be to categorize my SHBG variable because that can handle a linear or a nonlinear relationship. So I could categorize it stepwise. Based on what my plot showed, you can run a QQ plot, which you already did when you're testing your other assumptions anyways, right? You looked at your residual plots. So you're going to know how the shape of your data is going to look. You're going to plot your information out, and you're going to look at it. So I would say in this instance, I would use the categorical. And then when we go back and look at that model and how it performed compared to the continuous, when we look at the different variables inside the model, it did change the parameter estimates, but not greatly. Not to the point where it's going to be a huge issue. So that would be what I would recommend.
So,
Sure.
In terms of breaking a continuity in a categorical variable, there also could be multiple ways of doing that.
Right.
Would you recommend a certain way that is more likely to be agreed by, say, other readers or viewers?
Well, I mean, you can delve into the literature and look and see what other people did. That's always a way to go about things. And then see how it performs in your information. But what I would recommend is plotting your data and looking at it. And then basing it on your own data. And then talking about maybe if you did it the same way other people did in your strengths and limitations section, just a sentence or two about, you know, the other literature reports SHBG or albumin in this fashion. But when we plotted our data, the categorization was more appropriate. You're welcome.
If there are other questions, I'm going to ask folks to wait until the next speaker finishes.
Supposed to wait for 20 minutes.
So, thank you.
Thank you, everyone.